Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, I want to share with you today Corbett Report. James Corbett, quite a brilliant guy. I admire him greatly. Descent into madness, crazy conspiracy theorists. But how many of the so-called conspiracy theories turn out to be crazy at all? Take the January 6th business. We're seeing vast evidence it was indeed an elaborate conspiracy, that it was completing the coup that had been initiated by stealing the election from Donald Trump, and then to make sure there couldn't be any basis for a legal dispute over the election, knowing Trump supporters were coming. They orchestrated an event that would enable them to cut off discussion in the Congress. Just as two members were about to introduce motions that would have required a pause in the count to review the slates of electors submitted by the states so that they could preempt the meeting, four key officials departing the area, making it impossible to continue. Vice President Mike Pence, who is very much involved in all of this. Mitch McConnell, what a disgrace he turns out to be. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, nothing new there. So that before these motions could be floored, meaning introduced on the floor, even if they'd been voted down, it would have been a basis in the legal record to submit a protest, an objection, a legal objection to the United States Supreme Court. But by virtue of preempting the flooring of those questions, they denied everyone, I'd say everyone in the world, but everyone who had legal standing to bring the basis, the opportunity to have a foundation in events that had transpired there in the Capitol that day to request a review by the Supreme Court, so that in retrospect, that guaranteed that the court could not take up the theft of the election of 2020 because there was nothing in the record to justify, because they preempted the introduction of exactly what was needed to justify the court in taking up the issue. In other words, they very cleverly designed the event to complete the coup by precluding any possible basis for contesting the outcome of the election, which had, was massively stolen. But they used the J6 events in order to make sure it would be legally, technically impossible to raise the issue, because it had not been raised during the discussion, the deliberation, and the voting on the electors that took place in the Capitol, because exactly when they were about to introduce motions to pause to review, which might have entailed going back to the states to ask for clarification on the slate of electors whose votes ought to be counted, they cut it off. I mean, look, this was brilliantly designed. Now, in order for this to work, they had to have rather precise information about the protests, how they were going to transpire, and the timing, so I could make sure it didn't come too late. Look, once one of those motions had been introduced on the floor, again, as I say, even had it been voted down, that would have been a basis legally to dispute the election. And absent those motions, there would be no legal basis to dispute the election, so they made sure the motion didn't get on the floor. And I'm telling you, Mitch McConnell and Mike Pence were as deeply and profoundly involved in this scam to sabotage the Constitution, deny the American people our choice to be president of the United States, and turn it into the hands of a guy, not only an imposter who was there because of a fake vote, but whose agenda was intended to destroy America. I mean, he's proving very adept at that. Grotesque. So here we have more from the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoft. Wonderful. Does a brilliant job. Here's the latest. Dated today. It was a setup. Feds knew of registered Trump protests on January 6th outside the U.S. Capitol. Later, they entrapped thousands of Trump supporters in a restricted area where protesters had permits to rally. Get this. I mean, you want to know how nasty these bastards are? On October 13, 2022, the FBI testified that they were using geo-tracking data to identify Trump supporters who had gathered near the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. A bombshell report by the Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF, revealed the vast secretive partnership between private companies and the federal government to surveil and track the movement of millions of Americans. Let me say, this appears to be a blatant violation of the First Amendment, which precludes the government from interfering with our right to peaceable assembly. I mean, of course, also with our freedom of speech, our freedom of the press, our freedom of religion. But in this case, with a right to peacefully assemble to petition our government for grievances, in this instance, grievances over the conduct of the election of 2020. In other words, they were using these private companies as agents of the state, just as I'm convinced they've used Amazon.com as an agent of the state to ban not one, not two, not three, but six of my books. Why? Because I bring together groups of experts to sort out what really happened, and we nail it, whether it's Sandy Hook or the Boston bombing or Orlando and Dallas or Charlottesville or Parkland or even the moon landing. Though I believe that case, that sixth book was banned because of a request from the Anti-Defamation League, which can be viewed as the intellectual arm of the Mossad, asking Amazon to ban any book that disputed the official narrative of the Holocaust. Anyone who has done serious research on the Holocaust knows the whole thing falls apart immediately. It's a house of cards. For example, on the back cover, I published a photograph of the British soccer team in Auschwitz. What? You didn't know there was a British soccer team in Auschwitz? You didn't know? Did you know there was a hospital with OBGYN facilities, that there was a woodworking shop, that there was a symphony, that there was even a brothel in Auschwitz? It turns out hundreds of babies were born in these camps, which is just utterly preposterous. If these were the extermination centers, we're told, where you were offloaded from the cattle cars, stripped naked, deprived of all your jewelry, rushed into a decontamination center where you packed like sardines, you were subjected to Zyklon B, which turned out to be a mild form of cyanide that they actually were using in the camps to kill body lice, which were spreading typhus and dysentery because they wanted to protect the health of the inmates, for the simple reason that you can't get work out of a corpse. These were labor camps. They're typically near military centers, munition plants, and the like. They were using the inmates as slave labor. Yeah, that's deplorable. It's just a very different scenario than we've been told. Indeed, the International Committee of the Red Cross was keeping copious detailed records on every inmate who died. Their age, their sex, their ethnicity, their religion, their cause of death. And when they recalibrated their numbers in 1993, they found the total number who had died from all causes combined was 296,081. What, you may say? 296,081? I thought it was 6 million. Honestly, I doubt there was 6 million Jews in all of Europe at the time. That was a fantasy. That was a figure. That was a fabrication. That was fake. That was phony. Bert Zundel, great man, was prosecuted in Canada for distributing a pamphlet, Did 6 Million Really Die?, offering evidence that it's a preposterous number, and indeed it appears to have a theological origin, not historical, not factual, not empirical, theological, derivative of a disputed passage in Leviticus that's interpreted to mean that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when they're minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames, which is amenable to a whole lot of different interpretation. Indeed, since it was in the original Hebrew, which did not include a word for 6 million, even that requires interpolation. But it's further substantiation that it had no historical basis. We find a whole host of articles in the international press beginning as early as 1890. Remember, the Nuremberg tribunals wouldn't be held till what, 1945? 1890. Using that number, 6 million Jews in fear of risk of their lives, 236 examples of this before the Nuremberg tribunal, which purported to establish that 6 million Jews had died in gas chambers using Zyklon B. It was all bullshit. All bullshit. But the Zionists are fanatical about maintaining the myth. Why? Because Jewish political power is rooted in a Western sense of guilt over having allowed 6 million Jews to be put to death. And if 6 million Jews were not put to death, then there's no reason to have a sense of guilt for something that did not happen. And if there's no sense of guilt, then why not treat Jews and Israel and Zionists like any other political entity, which they deserve to be treated as any other political enemy? In fact, that they lie so massively that their whole scheme is predicated. It's like the Democrat Party, predicated on the lie that Joe Biden got more votes than any other candidate in history, when we've all known it was preposterous from the beginning. So the Zionists, like the Democrats, use big lies to promote their political platform, and they vilify anyone who disputes them. And by the way, if you want further substantiation, Nicole Erstrom, whom I featured on the show before, the historian of science from the UK, completely brilliant guy, the leading expert on the London 7-7 tube attacks, where he shattered that case by discovering that the train from Luton, that the four young Islamic lads who had apparently been hired to play roles in a drill that featured explosions at the three tube stop stations where explosions would take place, couldn't make it. They weren't there. They weren't even there. They weren't even in London, because the train from Luton was canceled that day. Nick Olerstrom found this. And when they discovered they were wanted for these events, and where there's an absolutely brilliant 7-7 ripple effect, completely brilliant documentary about how the explosion occurred at exactly the same tube stops in the vicinity of the same bus that are shown to be the targets in a drill. Peter Power ran a drill that day on the same locations, same timing, where it went live. I mean, this is very parallel to Sandy Hook. You got a drill, FEMA drill. It didn't actually go live because nobody actually died at Sandy Hook. And people did die in the London 7-7 subway attack. Nick has blown it apart. Terror on the Tube is his book. It's in, I don't know, the 5th, 6th, 10th edition, 10th printing. Like my first book on JFK, Assassination Science, where I brought together the best experts. That book went through some 14 printings and exposed how they altered the x-rays to conceal a blowout in the back of the head, substituted another brain for that of JFK, and raised a lot of questions about the Zapruder film, which our subsequent work established to have been extensively edited and revised so that, in fact, there are more frames missing from the film around 500 that are in the extant version, 487. So the government are playing these games all the time. Let's continue. Jim Holt, January 6th. According to the EFF, remember, Electronic Freedom Foundation, the Intel alphabet agencies, including ICE, the FBI, U.S. Secret Service, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, as well as state and local law enforcement, are being funneled hordes of private cell phone location data by private brokers who have harvested the information. This is the same tactic that Greg Phillips, Catherine Engelbrecht, and True the Vote used for their investigation into the mail-in ballot drop box fraud during the 2020 election. It's not just a Dominion voting machine. These drop boxes were massive. The cell phone location data collected by this group was used to identify the network of Democrat operatives who committed mass election fraud, as seen in the recently released documentary by Denise D'Souza, 2,000 Mules. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it. I mean, anyone who has the least doubt about the theft of the election in 2020, you got to see it. The FBI was alleged to have used this data to identify patriotic protesters who traveled to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, 2021, to support President Trump and the U.S. Constitution, which Pence and Schumer and Pelosi and McConnell were intent upon sabotaging. Tens of thousands of nearly a million protesters later walked to the U.S. Capitol following President Trump's speech, or more rallies were scheduled. Now, let me observe. Trump spoke until 1:11. These events at the Capitol and provocative events began at 12:45. So, Trump supporters weren't even there. It was a mile and a half away from the Ellipse. Since everyone attending a Trump rally is going to listen to the last word is spoken by the man, nobody, or virtually nobody, was leaving until 1:11, and then they had to go a mile and a half. Well, I walk a mile in about 15 minutes. This is a big crowd. It would probably move a little more slowly. But a mile and a half, 22 and a half minutes. 1:11, 22 and a half minutes. 1:33. I conjecture parties from the Trump rally weren't even there until around 1:33, and events were already well in progress. The FBI used geo-tracking to identify the movement of several targeted individuals in the zone. The government had an area called a restricted zone, only they didn't publicize that it was a restricted zone. Here's a photo showing the restricted zone around the U.S. Capitol where Trump supporters were gathering because they had permits to hold rallies in this area. They had permits to hold rallies in this area. We know today that there were no markers, flags, fencing, or other indicators that this area was off limits. There weren't any. Nothing to indicate this area was off limits. And now we have evidence the U.S. government in D.C. police knew thousands of Trump supporters would assemble in this area because they had permits for their rallies. The Trump supporters had flyers of the different scheduled events on January 5th and January 6th. Here are the flyers. Mega rally map guide for January 5th. mega rally map guide for January 6th. The government knew where everybody was. Also, the Capitol Hill police knew about several protests scheduled on January 6th at the Capitol because it was included in their own report. Included in their own report. They got a whole list here. They got a list of about a dozen. How then is it legal that Trump supporters today are still having their homes raided and are sent to prison for standing outside the U.S. Capitol on January 6th? Or for walking through the Capitol on January 6th without committing any violence? Thousands of Trump supporters. Just think of the scam here. The scam.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I promise you, Corbett, descent into madness, crazy conspiracy theorists. I think the guy's quite brilliant. In descent into madness, and this is now James Corbett, the weaponization of psychiatry. I told the long and sordid history of how the study of the mind has been used to suppress political opposition and subdue unruly segments of the population, not just in the enemy states of Soviet Russia or Nazi Germany or communist Cuba, but in England, in the U.S., and the rest of the free and democratic West as well. I also look at specific examples of how this was accomplished and name names of some of the figures who had a hand in forging this psychiatric weapon. Now, what he's talking about here is a weaponization, a political weaponization of psychology and psychiatry. He's not talking about the philosophical issue of the nature of mind. What is it to have a mind? Do animals have minds? How did human minds evolve from earlier primate sources? And so those are questions I address in my philosophical research, for example, on the nature of mind, Philosophy and Cognitive Science, second edition, if you can find it, really, really give you insights into the nature of mind and artificial intelligence and all that good stuff, free from any political interpretation or interference. Or, if you're willing to tackle this issue on a larger scale, the evolution of intelligence, where I'm talking about how behavior is related to biology. And there you'll see a whole discussion about the evolution of mind, animal mind, primitive origins, the whole bit. You'll learn a lot about evolution along the way, by the way, incidentally, which is usually lampooned by suggesting it just reduces to random mutation and natural selection. Well, random mutation is one, but only one of four different mechanisms for producing greater genetic diversity, yielding a range of different organisms that then can compete with one another and with their environment in order to survive to reproduce. For natural selection, it says that those that are the best successful in adapting survive to reproduce, which is, of course, as a rule, correct, except there are other factors. And where genetic mutation is one, but only one of four different mechanisms for producing genetic diversity. Sexual reproduction. That's what's important about sex, is in relation to evolution, as opposed to romantic exchanges and the like. It's a source of genetic diversity, because you have two contributors, each half of the chromosomes for a new organism that then has a different combination of traits, and therefore different innate adaptive abilities in relation to an environment. Our research with twins has shown that about 60% of our characteristics and traits are genetically inherited and the other 40% acquired environmentally. And then we have what's known as genetic drift. That's when you take a subpopulation of the human population and it's in an isolated or remote area, not interacting, but only with itself and its environment. And this appears to be the origin of the races. That all human life originated in Africa, but then was distributed, dispersed in different regions of planet Earth. And by virtue of the challenges confronted, I mean, contrast Africa, generally pretty constant environment, you know, hunter-gathering, animal hunting, versus moving east, going into Europe or Asia, where now you have winters. Now this season make a major difference. The adaptive capabilities of those who can survive in a seasonally varied environment are going to be different, actually greater than those that can survive in the savannas of Africa. So we have, I don't know, it might be 26 different, clearly distinctive races, but we tend only to talk about three or four. In any case, you can learn a whole lot about it. Then the fourth is genetic engineering. You know, actually go in and artificially change. That's what they're doing with these vax shots. They're actually changing our DNA, and not for the better. That's a very, very telling illustration of how a modern technology can be used for good or for bad. It's like AI. Artificial intelligence techniques, and I have published a lot on AI too, including perhaps most importantly, AI, artificial intelligence, its scope and limits. Wonderful at processing vast quantities of data, you know, sorting, performing operations, mathematical, whatever. All these things can be done with a high degree of sophistication. And now, of course, they're moving toward these robotified, let me say. It appears part of the great reset is going to be to control your brain, your thoughts, so they can manipulate you. My research, and I think conclusively established, you cannot turn an inanimate machine into a thinking thing. You cannot do it. You can simulate thought processes, but it's not being done the same way. Things with minds process information. It's not done the same way. And if my arguments are correct, then I've yet to see any significant rebuttal. Then you cannot turn an inanimate machine into a thinking thing. So what have they done? They're turning thinking things into more robotic-like machines. They've reversed. And here I think that their field is theoretically completely feasible, you know, exercising forms of mind control, especially, you know, electromagnetically implanting thoughts and all that. I have no doubt whatsoever all that is feasible and happens and is part of the game plan. So when they eliminate 7.5 billion and leave only a half a billion, 500 million to service serfs and slaves, the plan is to be able to control them by electrode implants or various forms of mind control. I have no doubt that's the plan. Pretty scary stuff. None of it, however, involves turning an inanimate machine into a thinking thing. So here you have James Corbett talking about how they want to weaponize psychology and psychiatry. This is in terms of, say, categories. Suppose, for example, you're pretty good at critical thinking, right? Taking things apart. You're not easily fooled. You're hard to play. Well, they could interpret that, you know, in a negative way, weaponize it as social resistance syndrome. You know, as if you believe things that most people don't believe, then you're being resistant to the predominant views. And they treat it as though that were negative. Frankly, we need a whole population of critical thinkers. I offered courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning for 35 years. To the best of my ability, I'm seeking to extend those abilities, those traits, because they're highly adaptive. And by the way, I left off, see, I talked about the four measures of speciation, of genetic variation, random mutation, sexual reproduction, genetic drift, and genetic engineering. Similarly, there are four mechanisms of selection of determining which of the organisms in this genetically diverse pool survive to reproduce, and thereby determine the character of the succeeding generations through reproduction. And those include not only natural selection, competition among, that's absolutely 100% one of them. There's also sexual selection. You know, which members of the opposite sex are found to be most attractive for the purpose of reproduction? You know, who gets the dates roughly? Lots of ways to put it. We're all very familiar with this. Then there's group selection. Group selection is extremely important. It has to do with how, say, a society is organized, such as with a division of labor. So you have different elements within society performing different tasks to get outcomes that you would not get if society were not organized that way. With that division of labor, I have sometimes used just as simple an illustration as Chicago Bulls football, you know, basketball team. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman. If you just change the positions, players, put the players in different positions, or you change the composition, it's going to make an effect. Or you can take a group of soldiers, just as random soldiers versus organized into a rifle squad, or add a machine gunner and a spotter and all that. And we're talking about ways how the arrangement or organization of society can make a difference to the outcomes. And then, of course, there's artificial selection. That's actually intervening to determine who reproduces or not, who lives or who dies. War can be regarded as a mode of artificial selection because it's bringing about death on a large scale, and people who are dead do not reproduce. So the most familiar example for you might be, you know, horse farms. Putting horses out to stud, charging fees to mate your stallion with a mare. So you got four different mechanisms of selection, too. You got natural selection. Gregory, I'm on the air. I'll call you when I'm free.
Well, anyway, while we wait here for Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. There he is. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mitchell. Yeah. I just was telling the caller I'd call him back. So what I'm saying here is we have, you know, these four different mechanisms of selection, just as we have four different mechanisms of speciation. And where I have yet another book about how, you know, the politicalization of science, Render Unto Darwin is its title, about how the religious right has attacked, you know, evolutionary theory. I mean, all this stuff about God and, you know, a creator and intelligent design and all that, that's the sort of thing I have dealt with extensively in my career as a philosopher of science and published about. So you can take advantage of that if you're so disposed. A lot of my books are still available on Amazon. I mean, where they went bananas is when I brought together groups of experts to explain that Sandy Hook had been a FEMA drill, that the Boston bombing was an orchestrated event using amputee actors, that Orlando, the permit for the club, had expired 3 years earlier. Just like Sandy Hook, they took an abandoned club in this case. When the permit expired at the Pulse, they repainted it black to show that it was closed. It had heretofore been white. It only had 11 parking spaces. It only had a legal occupancy of 150. They claimed they had 300 in there. They'd be packed in like sardines. Then they produced a video that was supposed to be inside the club, and you saw all this open space. I mean, it's preposterous. Not physically possible to have 300 people in that club and have them to be spaced out the way they're shown in the video. So either the claim there were 300 people in there was fake, or the video is fake, or they were both fake, and they were both fake. Or Charlottesville, completely contrived. Terry McAuliffe, then the governor, used the Virginia State Police to channel the peaceful protesters over a removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee. And this statue removal business, by the way, is catastrophic. It's part and parcel of cultural Marxism to destroy our appreciation of our past, our heritage, our values, where we came from, what we've overcome as a nation. Such as a civil war, for crying out loud, was those statues being taken down were monuments of respect to the South in recognition that they were good Americans who simply disagreed on some profound issues. But that we're Americans, we're all Americans and move forward. And you got disgusting cretins like George Soros and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, who are basically trying to exacerbate racial tensions that we long since overcame. I mean, it's just ridiculous beyond words. So in Charlottesville, they had a peaceful protest. They had permits, just like in January 6th, they had permits. But they're channeled into a violent confrontation with Antifa and BLM matters, which had been bussed in by George Soros often on the same bus. Then you had this bizarre incident where a guy who's supposed to be a 20-year-old schizophrenic is supposed to have driven a car into a crowd. Well, I have found three different takes, meaning that too is all set up. Hollywood, filming, stuntmen. In one of the takes, you got the car just driving into the crowd, no other vehicles in the vicinity. In another, you see the car crash in the back of two vans, which had been parked there for at least 5 minutes, and there were no drivers in the van because they didn't want him to suffer whiplash. And when the driver backed out, I was astonished because he handled that car with the skill of a NASCAR driver. And we got photographs. And it's not the 20-year-old schizophrenic who has heavy prescription glasses who was tried for the crime. It was a 32-year-old military veteran who commands a battalion of reservists in Ohio. I mean, it's what a scam. He got a third version. There's a black Toyota pickup truck just to the side, and you see two stuntmen flying through the air. That's the one they put on the cover of the New York Times. So Charlottesville was a scam, too. Parkland. Ridiculous. It was Valentine's Day. They sent the kids home at 1 o'clock. Because it was a holiday. There were 3,500 students there. The students had been there. You would have photos, cell phone, videos, all this bit galore. Instead, there's minuscule. But among what we have is a 57 5-week video inside a classroom where you see the kids doing their best to pretend they're scared, but you got one girl really worried about her. Bottle water is ubiquitous at these events. You see bottle water, that's a red flag. What you're watching is staged. Another's on her iPod. You got a kid pulling his putts. Then the camera swings around and you see there's a body on the ground in red stuff. But you look closer and it's a black training dummy that has no arms and no head lying on a pool of fake blood. They use fake blood in Boston too. So when the cameras first zoom in through the smoke, you see bodies lying there missing arms and legs, but there is no blood. As Lorraine Day has emphasized from the beginning, having been the head of trauma surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, you cannot have arms and legs blown off by explosives and there to be no blood. It's a physiological impossibility. And yet that's what we're shown in Boston. You got bodies lying there, missing arms and legs, and there is no blood. The blood only shows up later. I initially thought it came out of tubes. You'll hear it even, you know, in the promo for that book. And nobody died in Boston either, which, by the way, is just sensational. You cannot believe how thorough is the documentation that the Boston bombing was a sham. I've even been given reason to believe that Steven Spielberg orchestrated the Boston bombing, directed it. I'm telling you, this shit just is unbelievable. Well, the government doesn't want the American people to know these are all phony events, that these are all orchestrated, that these are all designed to play on your emotion, just as January 6th was orchestrated. They're just doing it on a bigger scale. They get away with it, they go on, they do more. Why they had to suppress my book on Sandy Hook, just as I explained. You're not supposed to understand that the government is pulling these scams off all the time. And as a friend emphasized to me the other day, he said, when they talk about people not coming forward, they don't realize these people are all under contract. They're under contract. The government goes into communities and sets it up, and they sign contracts, including non-disclosure agreements, for which they could be prosecuted were they to violate back after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Yeah, key point people don't appreciate. They're under contract. They can't talk about it. They run the risk of losing all the benefit. And there turns out to be all kinds of fringe benefits if you go along with one of these phony FEMA events. You may not have to pay any taxes. How's that? I think a lot of people would sign up. You might get free college. I mean, all you got to do is keep your mouth shut. That's what people give it a mouth shut. They got inducements. So when you hear, you know, some con man tell you, well, if it had been a fake, then people would have talked about it. They ain't necessarily so. If they're under contract, they may be unable to talk about it without incurring penalties or punishment on the one hand and losing benefits, many of which are financial on the other. They have good reason. So, you know, don't let yourself be played. And by the way, you know, Brian Davidson, who's a just wonderful, brilliant guy, this private investigator out of Texas, and I did a law enforcement false flag staged event checklist, which you can download. Just do go on and do a search. the law enforcement false flag slash stage event checklist and see if you can't find it. Now, there are two versions. One has two dates. That's how you know it's the updated. It says updated. And the difference was they took my blog, right? I mean, in their effort to suffocate, to suppress all the information I had, they actually took my blog, jamesfetzer.org. They took it. And the book. Nobody died in San Diego. They took the book. I mean, that's just insane. That's why I'm back in the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, because it was not even done in accordance with proper lawful procedure in Wisconsin. I mean, my lawsuit may turn out to be the greatest example of the weaponization of the law. It is grotesque from the beginning to the end, from the complaint to the conclusion. By the way, you know, Stormy Daniels was ordered to pay $300,000 to Trump for his legal expenses, for Trump legal expenses for Stormy Daniels. Well, do you imagine that was a far larger, vast, and more sprawling lawsuit than they're suing me for three sentences in a book that were supposed to be defamatory? Do you know how much a judge awarded in legal fees to the Posner team? $650,000. $650,000. And that's because I was trying to expose that the guy who came and testified under the name of Leonard Bosner didn't resemble the Leonard Bosner. His photographs had been sent all over the world, and I made that point to the court. I said, Your Honor, I said, why should there be all this concern over the image of the guy? I mean, his image has been all over the world, published millions of times, unless it's not the same guy. Fell on deaf ears. So here we got this wonderful guy, James Corbett, with that history of mine of how they have weaponized these psychiatric categories, you know, so that anyone who speaks the truth is supposed to be mentally ill. I mean, that's the idea. With that history in mind, this week I'll explore how the public has been trained to accept the pathologicalization of those peskiest of dissenters, the conspiracy realists. I'll also explain how the trigger has already been pulled on this psychiatric weapon and how it's impacting those who dare question the motives of our would-be rulers. Are you ready? Let's begin. Pathologizing conspiracy. One of the most popular articles to be written in recent decades, and again, this is James Corbett. In recent decades, it's titled, Why Do People Believe in Conspiracies? Well, I'd suggest because there's lots of evidence, and because they're true, and because they're rational. But of course, they don't want to admit there could be evidence that a conspiracy theory could be true, or they could be rational to believe. Quite the opposite. It starts by noting the worrying rise in the number of people who believe in wild, outlandish theories about how people in positions of power conspire to maintain their influence and expand their wealth. Why would anyone have any doubt that people in positions of power conspire to maintain their influence and expand their wealth? That's what they do. That's how they got to be in positions of power. The article's author then cites a psychologist who explains that well-meaning but emotionally unstable people typically latch onto these fantastical conspiracy theories because they help these poor deluded souls make sense of the world and offer them a feeling of control over an uncontrollable world. This is just silly. Well, it's just because they want to figure out what's going on. If they got a suspicion they're being lied to, they have evidence, reason to believe something's wrong. I mean, look, if the permit for the Pulse Club expired 3 years before, would there be a good reason to think there's something wrong about this mass shooting event claimed to have occurred there? If there are two or three different takes about the car hitting in Charlottesville, is that reason to think maybe something funny going on there? Maybe it's not what we've been told. If you have people lying there missing arms and legs, but there is no blood on the streets of Boston, isn't that reason to think there's something funny going on there? Is that irrational? Is that trying to give you a feeling of control over an uncontrollable world? Hell no! You just want to know what the hell's going on, man. Next. The report offers advice to those who are seeking to disabuse anyone who's fallen for this conspiracy claptrap of their delusional notions. That advice, it turns out, is the same admonition given to someone coming upon a wild animal in the jungle. Don't confront the target directly or make them angry. Speak to them in soothing tones and pretend to listen to what they're saying and disengage if it seems they're preparing to attack. Really, what he's saying is just don't argue because they're going to present evidence. Make arguments. Use logic. So, my God, that's the last thing you want to do if you're talking about Orlando or Charlottesville or the Boston bombing. But this article usually ends on a positive note. He's saying how many variations there are of the same article. If this wild conspiracy theorist you're talking to hasn't yet lost touch with the reality, then it may be possible to talk them down from the ledge. You can gently create some cognitive dissonance in their mind by pointing out that every conspiracy that has ever occurred in history has been exposed by whistleblowers and reported on by journalists. And therefore, there is no such thing as a secret conspiracy. If they are of sound mind, this will be enough. Your confused friend will see the light and learn to trust government and authority once again. You want to read the article? Would you like a link? Well, I don't have one link for you. I have dozens. You see, the curious thing about this, why do people believe in conspiracies article, is that it hasn't been written just once or twice. It's been written hundreds of times by hundreds of different journalists. And it's been published by the BBC and 538 and Vox and the American Psychological Association and the New York Times and Psych Central and Addiction Center and LSU and Technology Review and National Geographic and Very Well Mind and Business Insider and Psychology Today and Harvard and Life Science and Scientific American and NBC News and The Conversation and The Intelligencer and Time and The Guardian and Popular Mechanics and even the most prestigious of journalistic institution, Goop. Yes, Goop. And it's not only in written form. There's also a video report that's been filed by the BBC and Channel 4 and CNBC and Channel 4 again and D News and Star Talk and 60 Minutes and Time and D News again and Big Think and Al Jazeera and The Weekly and Tech Insider and Inverse and Dr. Todd Grande and Euronews and CBS News and the University of Chicago. Oh, and did I mention it's also a podcast? Well, it is. It's been produced by Ava Lassier and NBR and Radio Times and NBR again and LSE and Bill Gates and NBR again and the Ant Hill and Speaking of Psychology and NBR again and Big Brain and NBR again. So, are you starting to formulate the hypothesis that there may be some grand scheme afoot here? Do you find yourself speculating that perhaps, just perhaps, there might be a coordinated effort to pathologize conspiracy theories in order to justify locking them away in padded cells? Do you find it interesting that the terms conspiracy theory and mental disorder were forever linked in the public imagination when Richard Hofstadter penned his infamous 1964 essay in Harper's, "The Paranoid Style in American Politics," or that the best remembered passage from that essay is one in which he describes the style of mind behind the conspiracy-prone populist political movement of his era, known as the paranoid style, because no other word adequately evokes a sense of heated exaggeration, suspiciousness, and conspiratorial fantasy that I have in mind. Or, that is caveats to that diagnosis, namely, and I am not speaking in a clinical sense, but borrowing a clinical term for other purposes, in that I have neither the competence nor the desire to classify any figures of the past or present as certifiable lunatics or largely forgotten. Then the dinosaur media abundance and their psychiatric experts have a message for you. Shut up, conspiracy theorist, or they're going to put you in a straitjacket. Don't believe me? Well, first they came from the truthers. The idea that those who believe in conspiracy theories are mentally unsound is, of course, not new. Witness how the subject was treated on Barney Miller, a popular American sitcom from the late 70s that centered on the exploits of a cast of detectives in the New York City Police Department in one episode from 1981. A man is arrested for breaking into the offices of the Trilateral Commission because, as he explains in an impassioned speech, that is bizarrely punctuated by canned laughter. What they are really up to is a scheme to plant their own loyal members in positions of power in the country, to work to erase national boundaries and create an international community, and in time, bring about a one-world government, with David Rockefeller calling the shots. Actually, that's not at all far-fetched. The man then presents his evidence of the conspiracy in the form of articles in periodicals like Conspiracy Review and Suppressed Truth Roundup. Barney Miller's sneering reaction, along with the ever-present laugh track, is enough for the viewer to understand that this burglar, and by implication, anyone who harbors views similar about the Trilateral Commission or other globalist institutions, is a delusional criminal who deserves to be locked up for those beliefs. Or take the tinfoil hat conceit. As a crack journalist over at Vice helpfully explained, the concept of wearing a tinfoil hat to protect one's brain from government mind control was introduced into popular culture via Julian Huxley's 1927 story, The Tissue Culture King. In Huxley's tale, caps of mental foil are used to mitigate the effects of a mad scientist telepathic hypnosis experiment. Since then, the tinfoil hat married madman has gone on to become a ubiquitous pop culture trope employed by lazy TV writers as an easy way to signal to the audience that someone is suffering from paranoid delusions about vast government conspiracies. Or take President Lyndon Johnson's advisor, John P. Roche, who wrote a letter to Time's Literary Supplement, picked up and reported on by Time in January 1968. In the letter, Roche dismisses conspiracy theories about the JFK assassination as a gospel of a priesthood of marginal paranoids and declares such theories an assault on the sanity of American society, and I believe in its fundamental sanity. Well, it's no coincidence that this guy was an advisor to LBJ. The plot to assassinate JFK originated in Los Angeles in 1960 when Jack beat Lyndon for the Democrat nomination. He invited Stuart Symington of Missouri to be his running mate, but gave him overnight to think about it. In the meanwhile, Bobby went by the Johnson suite to extend a symbolic pro forma gesture of inviting him to run with Jack on the ticket. He was dumbfounded when Lyndon jumped on it, threatened to expose that JFK suffered from Addison's disease and therefore was not expected to live a long, healthy life. Then among his dalliances had been one with a beautiful woman who turned out to be a spy for East Germany, information he'd learned from Edgar, who hated the Kennedys as much as Lyndon. And moreover, that if he were not on the ticket, then any legislative proposal sent down by the White House would be dead on arrival, because in his position as a powerful majority leader of the Senate, LBJ would bottle him up. Jack and Bobby were gobsmacked. They had no idea what to do. Lyndon had them boxed in. They were forced to accede to his demand. It was the only time in his political career that JFK had to rescind a decision, but in this case, he had no choice. When one of Lyndon's wealthy backers heard the news, he burst into the Johnson suite cursing and swearing, because now LBJ would help JFK become president. Bobby Baker took him into a bedroom and explained what they had in mind. He came out all smiles, saying he thought that was an excellent plan. Bobby Baker, in public, would subsequently declare that JFK would not survive his first term, that he would die a violent death. Lyndon would send his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination. So, is it a surprise that an advisor to Lyndon Johnson would dismiss conspiracy theories about JFK as the gospel of a priesthood of marginal paranoids and declare such theories an assault on the sanity of American society? He's a propagandist. Lyndon was the brains behind it. I can't begin to tell you how much proof we have, including the testimony from those who knew Lyndon up close and personal, Madeline Duncan Brown, with whom he began an affair in 1948, Morrison, Stephen, 1950, with whom I had 100 conversations. Now, Lyndon, the night before, what was a ratification meeting at the home of Clint Murchison Sr., after appearing late in the evening unexpectedly in a board meeting of the power brokers deciding to go ahead with the assassination, he strode over to her and told her, and she said to me, she thought he was going to whisper sweet nothings in her ear. Instead, he told her in a hateful tone of voice, "I'm not going to have to put up with embarrassment from those Kenny boys after tomorrow. That's not a threat. That's a promise." Then he called her and said the same thing the following day before the motorcade. And then 6 weeks later, during a rendezvous they had on New Year's Eve in the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, she confronted with rumors rampant in Dallas at the time that he'd been involved, since no one stood to gain more personally. And Lyndon blew up at her and told her the oil boys and the CIA had decided that Jack had to be taken out. Well, I'm telling you, Lyndon wanted to be president of all the people. If you want to read a completely brilliant book that'll leave no doubt in your mind about his ruthless disposition, Phil Nelson, LBJ, Mastermind of JFK's Assassination, you got to read it. There's been an effort here to distract by a book called The Devil's chessboard by one David Talbot that wants to place the blame on Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles was a bureaucrat. Ridiculous. I took it apart. I was in a discussion thread with about two dozen very good people on JFK. Dulles didn't do it. He wasn't in a position. I'll tell you how bad it is. Lee Oswald was actually standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade passed by. So not only can he not have been the lone demented gunman, he cannot have even been one of the multiple shooters, and his regular listeners are well aware. I've identified six. Name, rank, number, the shots they took, the effects they had. Ole Domegaard, the seventh, with which I agree. We've got the eighth, one and only eighth. It was on the south knoll behind a tree there. You wouldn't think there was room for an assassin to hide, but I've seen photographed two different experts. Two different photographs holding his rifle, where each of the groups who were sponsoring the assassination appeared to have put up their own shooter. So we had a CIA shooter. This was a guy who became a Dallas cop, Roscoe White. We had a mob shooter. I believe that was Frank Sturgis, who may have been the best shot in the world at the time. We had a military, the Jack Lawrence inside the Triple Underpass, an Air Force expert. We had an Anacastro Cuban in the Dow Tags, where he's actually being supervised by George Herbert Walker Bush. We had Lyndon Johnson, personal hitman, Malcolm Mack Wallace, murdered a dozen people for Lyndon, including one of his own sisters. I mean, this is to give you an inkling of what was actually going on. We got an Israeli shooter in the Pergola area, representing the Bronfen family. I mean, it's just disgusting what happened there. And there were 10 or 12 shots fired. The idea of three shots? No, that's because only one weapon was left unsilenced. It was a Mandlicher Carcano being filed by the Anacastro Cuban Nestor Tony Escadro in the Dow Tags to set up the acoustical impression of only three shots having been fired.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Corbett's got this really, really good piece, which I'm republishing on my blog. So later today, you can check it out at jameshfetzer.org. And by the way, I did a review of the January 6th event and the absurdities thereof with David Zubling, and it had new information I hadn't covered before. You can find on my Twitter, or my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. So here it continues, you know, after Lyndon Johnson's apologist. So take the various examples of the pathologicization of conspiracy theorizing pointed out by Lance de Havilland Smith in his modern-day classic, Conspiracy Theory in America. Initially, conspiracy theories were not an object of ridicule and hostility. Today, however, the conspiracy theory label is employed routinely to dismiss a wide range of anti-government suspicions as symptoms of impaired thinking, akin to superstition or mental illness. For example, in a massive book published in 2007 on the assassination of President Kennedy, and it runs around, I had around 1,500 pages, former prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi says people who doubt the Warren Commission report are as kooky as a $3 bill in their beliefs and paranoia. Similarly, in his recently published book, Among the Truthers, Harvard 2011, Canadian journalist Jonathan Kay refers to 9/11 conspiracy theorists as political paranoiacs who have lost their grip on the real world, making a similar point, if more colorfully, in his popular book, Wingnuts. Journalist John Avlon refers to conspiracy believers as moonbats, patriots, wingnuts, and the fright wing. Certainly, there's no shortage of commentators perpetuating the idea that conspiracy theorizing is a form of mental illness. But it wasn't until the post-11 era of terror-manic panic accompanied by the rise of the Homeland Security State that the trigger was pulled on the loaded gun that is the psychiatric weapon. Let me just say, I knew Vince, Jesse Ventura, with whom I have a long relationship, with Jesse when he was governor, came up to Duluth during his weekly Friday governor's radio show and spent 15 minutes talking about this public-private aquarium that was in financial trouble in Duluth and 45 minutes talking with me about my first in the original trilogy, Assassination Science, where I brought together the experts that we proved the assassination had been shattering the cover-up, altering the x-rays, substituting another brain, raising real questions about the Zapruder film and the like. And then Jesse would, when he was back at Harvard after serving as governor, fly me back to give a conspiracy lecture at Harvard on the assassination, perhaps the only ever given there. He'd have me on his Jesse Ventura's America with Beverly Oliver, actually witnessed the blowout of the head with when she was filming in Dealey Plaza. Aubrey Reich, who was the ambulance driver, felt the blowout of the back of the head when he participated in lifting the body into the bronze ceremonial casket. And me to explain how they altered the x-rays that concealed the blowout. And then later on his conspiracy theory show, how he'd fly me out to Ventura County, and Jesse actually took his name Ventura from Ventura County, and liked the name, to verify that they were replicating the alleged shooting of Lee Oswald properly, where Jesse had a far superior man, Licker Gargano, who was a much better shot than Lee was supposed to be, and Lee was terrible. And where we did three replications, I mean, I was there to, you know, use stationary bales of hay to represent the limousines, the targets, and to make sure the angles and the distances were correct. And mind you now, these were stationary targets. We're in three replications, none of which really quite satisfied the time constraint of 6.5 seconds or so. He managed to hit one target one time. And again, stationary. So I'm a fan of Jesse. We had dinner together with Vince Bugliosi in St. Paul after Vince got an honorary degree, a law degree from Hamlin. And it's one of my favorite photographs of me with the two of them. And if you go to givesandgo.com, funding Fetzer, this is, you know, my legal defense fund donation site. I put up the photo of Jesse and Vince and me now in his book. Vincent Bugliosi says that mine, and he's talking now about Assassination Science 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza 2000, and the Great Zapruder Film Hoax 2003, are the only exclusively scientific books ever published on the assassination. Now, saying that, why didn't he take our results to heart? I mean, he's now gone on to greener pastures. I believe Vince was actually paid $1 million to put his name on the book. It's not a good book. But then how could a book defending the Warren Commission be a good book when we know Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository? But here we have Lyndon Johnson's advisor assuring us that conspiracy theories about the JFK assassination are the gospel of a priesthood of marginal paranoids, and that such theories are an assault on the sanity of American society. Well, if you don't want to know the truth. So, and this guy, Jonathan Kay, is just a scumbag among the truthers. I've had discussion with others who are trashed by this guy. Very, very bad stuff. I mean, embarrassing. Certainly, he adds, no shortage of commentators perpetuating the idea of conspiracy theorizing a form of mental illness that took off with Homeland Security after 9/11. And of course, 9/11, I mean, I've done a huge amount. I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Let me say, by the way, this last week I was involved in a debate about 9/11. With Michael Shermer. I mean, it was odd in a way, because Shermer didn't show up. So Rick Shattuck, who's been organizing the debates for 10 years, figured out a way to work around it by using an interview that Schumer had done on C-SPAN, and where there were a lot of callers, as his presentation, and then I commented on what he had to say. Now, you can find the debate at Anita, ANETA.org/debate/2023. And it's interesting, it's up on Vimeo, and something about Vimeo is you can upgrade, you can make improvements. So originally I was on the side, but Rick is now, I don't know, I haven't seen the latest version, but he's going to have me side by side with Michael Shermer. And I go through, you know, I comment on every point that Shermer makes. And honest to God, you gotta watch this thing to just see how grossly Michael Shermer misrepresents the evidence about 9/11. Now, it was an interesting choice because, as Rick explains at the beginning, how we seem to be pretty evenly matched. That Shermer earned his PhD in the history of science at Claremont. I earned my PhD in the philosophy of science at Indiana. Then he got a BS at Pepperdine. I got my BA at Princeton. He's a professor at Claremont, and I'm a professor emeritus at the University of Minnesota. He's a founder and editor of Skeptic Magazine, where I'm the founder and chair of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Where at the time he had 6,199 citations with a Hirsch index of 29, and I had 4,202 citations with a Hirsch index of 34, that we both have articles or entries in Wikipedia. Let me explain that Hirsch index thing. Rick likes that because it's a measure of scholarly impact. A Hirsch index at 29 means that Michael Shermer has at least 29 articles that have each received at least 29 citations. So if I have a Hirsch index of 34, then I have at least 34 articles that have at least 34 citations apiece. And I, this 4202, I mean, I get almost every day a notion of another mention or citation of one of my articles. And I think it's up to about 1,000 more citations. Anyway, he certainly got it right that we were well matched credentially. And you just have to make your assessment, an assessment for yourself, whether you think intellectually or in terms of argument or evidence, that it's a close call. I leave it to you. Again, I repeat, Anita, A-N-E-T-A. It sounds like about Association for 9/11, Truth. A-N-E-T-A. I'm looking at it on caps.org/debate/2023, because as I say, there have been 10 of these. So this was a 10th annual debate. And the emphasis was on scientific issues. So here he's got a background in the history of science and I in the philosophy of science. And he's, of course, a great skeptic. As you'll find, I suggest, I believe we have here an instance of Lenin's observation that the best way to control the opposition is to lead it. Lieutenant Corbett. Of course, the post 9/11 decade was filled with academics, journalists, and talking heads of various stripes conflating conspiracy theorizing with mental illness, exactly as the pre 9/11 era had been, heeding Bush the Younger's injunction to never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. political combinations of all stripes began a campaign of vitriol directed against 9/11 truthers that began to ratchet the conspiracy insanity rhetoric to new heights. Bill Maher's joke that truthers should stop asking me to raise this ridiculous topic on the show and start asking your doctor if Paxil is right for you helped to fertilize the soil for the likes of Winnipeg Sun columnist Stephen Ripley, who then diagnosed 9/11 truthers as suffering from paranoid delusions. These pronouncements prepared the public for the fulmination of TV talking heads on both the left and right side of the political spectrum, that necrotizing conspiracy theory radicalism is a danger to society, and that the crazy truthers perpetuating these delusions need to be treated as potential terrorists. But the campaign to demonize 9/11 truthers as psychologically disturbed and potentially violent criminals who need to be taken off the streets has not stopped at harsh words and strong rhetoric. Institutions and authorities have now begun trying to literally declare truthers and other conspiracy theorists as insane as a way of silencing political dissent. Well, when it comes to 9/11, you got a pretty fair exchange here of two points of view. Michael Shermer, who basically upholds the 9/11 Commission report, and I, who seek to dismember it. It is unworthy. I mean, just to make a couple of obvious points. Half a dozen or more of the 19 alleged Islamic terrorists who are supposed to commandeer the four commercial carriers and perpetrated these atrocities under the control of a Gayov in a cave in Afghanistan turned up alive and well the following day, made contact with the British media. David Bray Griffin, the dean of 9/11 research, I mean, that the very first point in his magisterial book, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Well, if they're alive, then they didn't die in any suicide crashes, right? But the FBI has not revised its list of the 19. It's got the same 19, including the names of the half a dozen or so that showed up alive and well the following day. And the guy off in the cave in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden, was our man in Afghanistan. He was instrumental in getting the Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen, which they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes and drive them out of that godforsaken region. Osama was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osman. An official from the agency visited him in a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death from his medical maladies. It's tough to get dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan. On 15 December 2001, he was buried in an unmarked grave in accordance with Muslim tradition. There were local obituaries by the 26th of December. Both Fox News and CNN had caught up with the news and were reporting that Osama was dead. Well, the chair of scholars on the website, the remnants of which you can find at 911scholars.org, we're publishing about the fake Osamas, the fake videos, and all that nonsense, where Barack Obama found it politically expedient to resurrect Osama and have him die again in a stage raid on a compound in Pakistan. Well, the local residents said they'd never seen hide nor hair of Osama and wouldn't show them the photograph of the guy holding the TV clicker. They said that was the owner of the compound. and most definitely not Osama bin Laden. But Barack Obama found it so beneficial, you see, to position himself as the guy who got the most wanted man in the world for a triumphal reelection, that, you know, this is the way it went. I have exposed this multiple places. Look, they even published, made a movie about the raid on the compound, Zero Dark 30. And I published a piece about Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truths. You can find this in my book about the moon landing. You know, I not only have on the moon landing, I got a whole lot of chapters about the death of Paul McCartney as replacement by an even better musician. The most controversial issue I ever address. Even I get more expressions of outrage over that than they do about the Holocaust. But also two chapters about the death and replacement of Saddam Hussein, where the real Saddam actually died on the 7th of April, 2003, just 3 weeks into the attack, and a B-1 bomber on a assault on a restaurant on the outskirts of Baghdad, taking out Osama, his two sons, and 50 or 60 members of his general staff. So he replaced him by one of his doubles, whom they put on trial and then hanged. And then about how Osama was our man in Afghanistan. There's a lot of good stuff there. That's my favorite, actually, of my books. And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, which Mike Palachek suggested as a title for the sequel to our first book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Hearing the title of which, they might very well say, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. And yeah, no, we didn't go to the moon either. And nobody died at Sandy Hook. And, you know, we live and we learn. If you go to my blog now, when we're talking here about this wonderful piece by James Corbett, go to my blog at jameshfetzer.org and look for JimTheConspiracyGuy.com or the 65 shows. And you're going to find there 65 shows I did in less than a 1 year. I mean, it was, I think it was between May and November. I did 65 shows on this channel that had been supported by a follower, Jim the Conspiracy Guy. And look at How to Spot a False Flag Part 1, How to Spot a False Flag Part 2. And I think for Part 2, you got to scroll down. The first one somehow didn't take, but it's all there. And then there's a whole lot more, including one about Parkland, by the way, you're going to love, but it's about how Gary Knoll kicked me off of his progressive radio network out of New York for exposing Parkland. I mean, it was just stunning to me, a guy who poses as a champion of free speech gave Jim Fetzer the boot because he was explaining the fraud that was Parkland. Wow. You're going to find a whole lot of good stuff there. But anyone who has any doubt or, you know, you have any doubts about whether who's insane, you know, who's pulling our chain, who's lying to us. This is why they have to go after the conspiracy theorists so aggressively. Unbelievable. Well, James Corbett's done a wonderful job. Sorry not taking calls today, but I just want to share so much. I'm very, very impressed with James Corbett. As I say, you'll be able to find it on my blog here in short order. I should have it up within 30 minutes, I would say. It's going to be up there. Really good stuff. And you know, keep the faith. Don't let yourself be played. It's those who are attacking the conspiracy theorists who got it wrong. Conspiracy theorists, this is also on my blog. Conspiracy theorists are investigating crimes, typically ones that lead back to the federal government. That's why they want to suppress us. There's also a wonderful piece there about Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was being attacked for, I don't know, seven or eight different grounds. And I looked into the seven or eight different grounds, and Marjorie Taylor Greene was right on every single one of them. and this January 6th stuff being exposed is very important, because it means a lot of people who in the past would have been skeptical might have their eyes open by the realization that this was a huge, huge scam. Huge scam. So I want to thank you all for being here, of course. Lots of resources there. Check out my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. I'll get the debate up there too. I'll get the debate up there too. And my critique about January 6th and how it was used to complete the coup. That's a must listen, in my opinion. That is so damn important. So of course, they're going to be trolls. They're going to try to debunk it. I mean, that goes with the territory. They are ubiquitous. But the fact is, we do have the resources to sort out the truth, and that's why they have to attack the conspiracy theorists, because they're exposing crimes that lead back to the government. So the government's going to do everything it can to forestall being implicated, up to and including past presidents of the United States. So thanks for being here. See you on Wednesday.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs, government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and...